The following is a paid advertisement of St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedics. References to any specific product, services, or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by St. Anthony Hospital, Carroll Broadcasting, or its advertisers. The views expressed by the host or guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Welcome to the St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedic Show with Dr. Richard Godding. Dr. Godding specializes in joint preservation, reconstruction, and replacement surgery, and brings over 25 years of orthopedic excellence to St. Anthony Hospital and to the Carroll area. For more information about Dr. Godding, his practice, or St. Anthony Orthopedics, go to stanthonyhospital.org or make an appointment by calling 712-794-5536.
Good Sunday morning, Iowa. It's Dr. Rick Godding. Thank you for choosing to spend some time with me here this morning. And I would tell you that I've been doing the carnivore diet again this entire year. Been very good. However, the other day, Culver's has this walleye dinner. And I took a lot of the breading off of it, and I didn't eat any French fries. I had a little coleslaw and a walleye dinner. Oh, man, it's so good. If you are looking for a place to eat fish on Fridays during this Lent, look no further than Culver's, because it's really fantastic. And of course, I always feel guilty when I eat stuff like that, but you gotta do it sometimes, right? You gotta live a little bit. You can't live only on your super strict diet. Although I will tell you, then after that, I went on a little weekend trip with my family, and I didn't actually stay carnivore because it was just going to be too much of a hassle. And I gained about 8 pounds. It's crazy. Now, I understand that most of that's probably just water. I know I didn't gain. It's impossible to gain 8 pounds of fat that fast. It just doesn't, your body doesn't work that way. But it does tell me that, you know, what I'm doing is working. And I had just, ironically, just gotten down to the lowest weight that I had been this year and in a long time, because I stopped the carnivore and kind of went keto and off and on for 2025. I was full carnivore for 2024, went from like just under 280 to 220, and then, sorry, 230. No, I never made it to 220, just 230. I wish I was 220. That's my goal. I never made it there. So I lost about 50, just under 50 pounds, or right around 50 pounds, and kind of started gaining that back. And then I got to the point a couple weeks ago where I was back to, I had lost, it was 35 pounds down from the original weight, and then I gained this little bit back. But now I'm good. I've had my little cheat, and I'm ready to head back into it. And one of the reasons I tell you about this is because I know there's a lot of people out there like me who struggle. And, you know, nowadays there's a lot of different tools. We don't know the long term on the Ozempic and the tirzepatide, but I can tell you that there are people in my life who have used specifically tirzepatide. I don't know a lot of people. I don't have a lot of experience with the Ozempic as far as people that I know. And most of my patients and most of the people that I know have been on the tirzepatide, who have had tremendous success. And I know that we don't know the long term on it. And, you know, hopefully it doesn't create a whole bunch of giant long-term problems. But there's no question that I know a lot of people who just flat out are healthier. And I would say the same thing. I have this friend who she's just 100% convinced that the carnivore diet couldn't possibly be healthy. And I say to her, look, I don't know how you want to measure health, but my health is better on every parameter than it was before I started the carnivore diet. So my triglycerides improved, my overall cholesterol improved, my cholesterol profile, meaning the HDL to LDL ratio improved, my blood pressure improved, my energy improved, my lean muscle mass increased, my body fat plummeted, my fasting blood glucose improved. And so, you know, a lot of people say, oh, well, your cholesterol, no, my cholesterol went down, and I eat lots of fat. But the thing about it is, and again, I'm not suggesting any particular diet. I'm saying there's a lot of different ways to get there. This is the way that I chose. I always say that I've seen people have success with the Mediterranean diet. I've seen people have success with all kinds of different diets. I think a low-fat, high-carb diet, I don't know how that's ever going to work for you. Just the way our bodies are made, we're not really adapted well to eating lots of carbohydrates. And we know that sugar is literally poison. Like, you can kill yourself eating sugar. You can't eat so much fat in one sitting that you die. I don't think that's possible. Nah, you could check me on that. But I mean, you know, look, you can drink enough water to die. If you drank 6 gallons of water, you would probably die. As a matter of fact, there was a radio program once where they were having a contest to see who could drink the most water, and this woman died while she was doing this contest. So, you know, anything in super excess can kill you. I mean, that's just the truth of life, right? Too much success can kill you. Too much of anything can kill you. But so it's not just me and my own personal, but I see so many of my patients whose musculoskeletal conditions. Now, I am a musculoskeletal surgeon. That's what orthopedics is. I have the muscles, and the musculoskeletal system consists of the bones, the ligaments, the tendons, the cartilage. That's the musculoskeletal system. You have different systems in your body, and you have people who, some physicians who are specialized in those things. The integumentary system is essentially the skin and connective tissue, but you have dermatologists who take care of that, right? The cardiovascular system, you have cardiologists and cardiac surgeons and vascular surgeons that take care of that. So the hepatobiliary system, which is the liver, you have specific doctors who take care of that, and on and on. And my job is to take care of the musculoskeletal system, but it is not in isolation. And it is a, you know, so the musculoskeletal system is all about physics, because it's all, the joints are moving, and the movement causes strain across the joints, and the movement causes strain across the muscles and tendons. And the more strain you have across them, so to some extent, it can be helpful, like lifting weights and exercising and things like that are good. But if you have too much weight on your body, you are overloading your joints, especially your weight-bearing joints, your knees, your hips, and your ankles and feet. And there is also a lot of data that tells us that the chemicals that are produced in fat cells are inflammatory overall to your body. So if you have more fat in your body, you are living, in, by definition, in a higher inflammatory condition. And those inflammatory, they're called inflammatory mediators. So these are small little molecules, and molecules are just atoms that are bound together. So there are these small molecules called inflammatory mediators, and they actually cause inflammation in many different parts of your body, and that includes your joints. Now, arthritis is an inflammatory condition. Some types of arthritis are more inflammatory than others. Rheumatoid arthritis is an inflammatory condition primarily, whereas osteoarthritis is the breakdown of the cartilage, and it's a combination of both mechanical and inflammatory conditions. So you can injure your cartilage in your knee by smashing your knee against a dashboard, for instance, in a car accident. So then you have mechanical damage, and you have the inflammatory process that comes behind that. Now, if you were, let's say you're 35 and you smash your kneecap on the door, on the dashboard, and you crack the cartilage on the back of your kneecap, okay, so then that cartilage doesn't have the capacity to heal in the way bone does, or other muscles and different types of tissues in your body. They all have, all the tissues in your body have different healing capacities. The heart is notoriously not very good at regenerating once it's damaged. If you have a heart attack, then the muscle that died is not coming back. Your liver, however, if you injure your liver can regenerate. Kidneys cannot. So there's just different parts of your body. So cartilage is in the category of it does not repair itself in the form that it exists to begin with. Now, if you injure your cartilage, if your kneecap knocks a big chunk of cartilage off of the back of it, and that cartilage is floating around in your knee, and we go in and take it out, what we can do is we can drill the bone in the kneecap, and then stem cells, and you've heard stem cells, I'm sure, can come in from your bone marrow. Stem cells are cells in your body that can become anything. So, in other words, your blood cells have to be created by something, because you have new blood cells, and then those old blood cells are, when they've lasted their lifetime, they're filtered out of your body, right? And they exit your body in your waste. And so where is that blood cell coming from? Well, it's coming from a stem cell. So a stem cell can become a blood cell, can become a brain cell when you're younger. Your brain cells don't regenerate very well either. But like the cells that are like your fingernails. Where are the cells that are creating your fingernails? They're originally coming from stem cells. That's how they're generated. So that's why stem cells have in the past been used medically to a significant extent. The idea was that you could inject some stem cells and maybe those stem cells would become the type of cartilage cells that we want, which is not the same type of cartilage that is grown from the beginning. Okay, so as your let's just talk about the knee. So your kneecap, okay, as your kneecap is forming, the cartilage on the surface of the kneecap has certain properties to it. And the type of cartilage that replaces it when you have an injury is called fibrocartilage. So your stem cells can create fibrocartilage, but they cannot create the original cartilage that was there in the first place. So it's a substitute, and it doesn't have the same properties. The hyaline cartilage, which is what is originally on the ends of your joints, is replaced by fibrocartilage after an injury. And even if you inject stem cells in your knee, it's not going to create the original hyaline cartilage. So that doesn't mean that stem cells aren't helpful. I think that they do have a place. I used to do a lot of stem cell work. What we found was it didn't seem like patients were having longer-term better outcomes. In other words, for instance, I had stem cells in my shoulder and it helped for about a year and a half. And then my shoulder started hurting again and my rotator cuff did not heal itself. It did feel better for a while, but I ended up having surgery anyway. We can do that same thing now so a few years ago, the FDA came in to one of the national orthopedic meetings and said, you guys should stop using stem cells. We're going to start not having stem cells be as well tolerated, I guess, or however they didn't want us to use stem cells. So most orthopedic surgeons stopped using stem cells. I don't know of any that are still there. And if they are, I'm not saying there's a problem with it. I'm saying that they're involved in some risk with respect to the FDA. But there is a treatment called platelet-rich plasma. And this is something that we do offer in the office here in Carroll. And it is an alternative to corticosteroid injections. So corticosteroid injections we give into the joint and at times into the tendon areas, usually not directly into the tendon. But why would you give a corticosteroid injection? Well, if someone, we're talking about the knee. So if your knee has some cartilage breakdown, some osteoarthritis, you're having a lot of pain, it's not bad enough to replace the knee, but you need something done because you're really having a lot of pain. Well, we can inject a corticosteroid. And that corticosteroid is going to reduce the inflammation in the joint, and it's going to help you feel better for a while. The downside is it does damage the cartilage, at least to a certain extent, in the shorter term. So the other options that we have for injections, one is called viscosupplementation, and this is the old quote-unquote chicken comb, because they used to use chicken comb material, I guess, to synthesize this liquid, which is hyaluronic acid. And it is a substitute. It's literally a lubrication job for the knee. So you have the corticosteroids, you have the lube job, and then you have the platelet-rich plasma. So the platelet-rich plasma, we take the blood out of your arm, we spin it down until it has plasma left and the red blood cells are out of it. So the plasma has a lot of platelets in it, and these platelets and this plasma have a very profound anti-inflammatory effect on your joint. You can use it for shoulders and knees. It's very, very good on tennis elbow. I actually used it for my own tennis elbow, and I thought I was going to have surgery on my elbow, and I had this platelet-rich plasma injection. I had already had a corticosteroid injection, and that was not helping. I had done therapy. I used a little tennis elbow band, and I mean, it was bad. And it took about 4 months, and it actually got worse before it got better, but now I do not have any symptoms at all of tennis elbow. So it has a place, this platelet-rich plasma. Now, if you inject it into the joint, it has a profound, like I said, anti-inflammatory effect. And there's some evidence that maybe it can make the cartilage that's there a little bit just healthier. But there's no long-term studies that say, hey, one of the questions I get is, can I prevent a knee replacement by these injections? You have to look at anything that we're doing for the knee short of replacing it. Is what we're trying to do is extend the lifespan of the knee. So we're trying to keep your own knee for as long as you can, or shoulder, or whatever. And can you prevent a knee replacement by getting these injections? Well, you can prolong it, and I guess if you prolong it long enough, you're going to prevent it. So it's a very gray area. And when to have the knee replacement is when you have gone as far as you can with the injections, whether you, maybe you had a cortisone injection and that worked for a while, and then you stopped having those and started having the viscosupplementation injections, and then those stopped working. Maybe you tried a platelet-rich plasma. You tried all the injections. It's not working. You have bad arthritis on your x-ray, and you can't walk very well, and it hurts, and you're not doing those things that you want to do. That's when you have a knee replacement. But before that, again, we have this whole spectrum of injections that we can use. And I like the platelet-rich plasma. Insurance does not cover it. I can't remember exactly how much we charge. It's, let's say, not a lot more than 500 and less than 1,000. I can't remember exactly, but because I don't have anything to do with all the billing and stuff. But it is an option for people who say, look, I don't want cortisone because it does at least some damage to my joint. Maybe you've tried the viscosupplementation, which is typically covered by insurance, and maybe that's not working anymore, and you're willing to take the financial risk of getting the platelet-rich plasma. And so, you know, I want to have, in my practice, Dr. Dirks and I want to have, in our practice, we want to have every option available for the patients because, you know, we don't want anybody coming in thinking that we have a particular way that we want to go with your problem. We want you to have a long list of options and make the best decision for you. And for some people, obviously, you know, some people money doesn't matter. In other words, they have enough money that they're not concerned about the cost. There's some people that aren't concerned about the cost of anything, which is funny because my wife just texted me a picture of Reynolds wrap for $14.95 at the grocery store. She's like, you got to be kidding me. Yeah, $14.95 for Reynolds wrap. So, yeah, I don't fall into the category of people who don't worry at all about money. But obviously, there's a spectrum. And for those people who want to take the investment to do the platelet-rich plasma, we want to have that as an option. But I never would say, hey, if you do this, you won't have a knee replacement. That's just not how things work. It's all a matter of using everything that we can, going from the least invasive and the least potentially harmful and the least expensive up into the most in a stepwise fashion so that you feel like you have had everything done before you're having a big surgery, because there's always risks with surgery. I mean, there are people who come in my office and they have terrible looking x-ray on their knee and they say, you know, I've had 6 injections. I don't want any more injections. I can hardly walk around the block. Fix my knee. That's an easy decision to make. But a lot of people fall into that gray area where, well, you know, I had an injection. It helped for a little while. I'm taking this medication. I can walk pretty good. It just hurts at the end of the day. That's where it's a lot more gray. And so to recap, there's 3 basic types of injections that we can use. And they all are trying to do the same thing, which is reduce inflammation and prolong the life of your natural joint. And so ranking from the least harmful to the most potentially harmful, I would say the least harmful would be the platelet-rich plasma. And right in the middle, and not really harmful at all, is the viscosupplementation. Then a little tiny bit harmful, but look, I've had cortisone injections in my shoulders and knees and my hands, my carpal tunnel, my trigger fingers. I've had lots of cortisone. It has its place. You know, you can't get into these rigid thought process, oh, I don't want cortisone. Cortisone's bad for me. Well, okay. But, you know, if you're taking cortisone every 3 months in your knee, eventually you're just going to need a knee replacement. But what are the other options? Well, we've talked about them. So you know, it's there's few things that are absolutely definitive in orthopedics and in life. Some of them are, if you break your hip, you better have surgery or you're just going to lay in bed until you die. There's, you know, if you break your femur, you better fix it or you never walk right again. But when he gets into the other things, it starts to get a little bit more gray. So we just want to have the best options. Cortisone is a very good option early on in the disease process. It's probably not as good as the others, but later on, once you're kind of bone on bone, it doesn't really matter what you do. You're just playing for time. So I hope I've explained that well. The overriding theme is that a lot of these musculoskeletal conditions, specifically arthritis and rotator cuff tears and things like that, they're progressive. They worsen over time, and eventually the definitive answer is surgery, but there's a whole lot of tools in our toolkit that we can use before you get there. So looks like spring is springing, and get out and move your body and get some vitamin D, eat well, and have a wonderful week. And I will be back next week. So you just have a blessed week, Iowa.
This has been the St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedic Show with Dr. Richard Godding. For more information about Dr. Godding, his practice, or St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedics, go to www.stanthonyhospital.org or make an appointment by calling 712-794-5536.